What's up, everybody? It's Bretzky, and America is turning 250. And I can't think of a better way to celebrate that than playing on an American-owned social casino, SpinQuest.com. With all of your favorite games, live craps, bubble craps, live blackjack, there's no better place to play for free and win real cash prizes. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Final hour, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Kieser here with you on this Thursday morning. And as we do every Thursday morning at 8 o'clock, we go to our 102.5, the game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Welcome in our friend Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports. Charles, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well, Ben. How are you doing this morning?
Awesome. Appreciate you taking time to be with us. So the Titans at 0-2. Taking on the Green Bay Packers on Sunday. We all have been heavily anticipating the Malik Willis versus Will Levis show, but then Jordan Love stepped on the practice field yesterday. So what do you make of kind of that dynamic heading into this with Jordan Love back at practice and Malik Willis coming off a victory against the Indianapolis Colts as the Titans prepare to host the Packers this weekend?
Yeah, it's interesting, you know, that Love could potentially return this quickly. I just wonder what exactly is the there's two things here. Number one, I'm like, is this an okie doke? Like, are they throwing this out there, leaking this just to, you know, provide an element of confusion heading into this game and potentially force the Titans to, you know, prepare for two quarterbacks when the reality it's going to be Malik Willis. And if it's Malik Willis, it's the easiest preparation possible because you know the guy. If he does come back, though, I'm it's quite a turnaround, and I'm wondering, you know, what the wisdom is there. Is he coming back too fast? I mean, I'm not out there watching him in practice, obviously. We won't know until we see him on a football field how he's moving and whether or not this was something that maybe was a little forced. But I'll say this. I thought about it with Tua, too. Some of these deals, these extensions get signed, and, you know, I was talking to somebody in the Dolphins organization about Tua, and I was asking, you know, when the concussion happens, do you think he feels a personal sense of, like, responsibility where he's like, I just signed this huge deal. I have a ton of money coming to me. It can't be over because I can't walk away from what, you know, what I just took on financially. And, you know, does that enter his mindset? And, you know, I don't think the Dolphins really feel that, but he's like, look, every person you want to show that you're worthy of getting the paycheck you just signed, especially when it's something that massive. And I wonder that with Jordan Love too. You get injured and it's like every game you miss, you kind of do that math in your head where you're like, okay, well, it's a massive game check that now I'm not out there justifying. And so part of me wonders if that's, you know, plays into a player's mind and you push yourself to get back a little bit. And you know, Willis, I will say this for Matt LaFleur. I thought he balanced out the game plan really well for Malik Willis. He limited, you know, the opportunities for him to make mistakes. I think they made sure they did as good a job as possible of keeping him from holding the football at times. You know, for what it was in a pinch, I thought Malik did a good job. I don't know how sustainable that is long-term in terms of, you know, having to protect him and then teams eventually adjusting to what they know they're limiting Malik to offensively. But Joe loves Malik, and Malik showed up for him last week.
Well,
so I was thinking about
Robbie.
Is Robbie the big?
Robbie was there screaming in approval of Malik Willis and Matt LaFleur, who he now acknowledges as the biggest genius in the NFL.
Greatest coach of all time.
Hey, you know what? It's the best game I've ever seen Malik play. I'll say that. I was stunned.
I was too.
You know, some of the things that he was doing, you know, the opportunities to run at times, I thought he was very smart in the decisions that he made. And I just thought, okay, this is when he got inserted into that game at the end of the game after Jordan Love got hurt and he held that ball and he got sacked at the end. I was like, yep. I'm like, this is what this is going to be like if this guy's got to start. But that's not at all what he looked like. I just thought LaFleur did a really, really good job of making sure he schemed it to take away Malik standing there and having to make a lot of decisions. It was pretty much a one decision and go situation. Like, here's your read. If the read's not there, you know, you can run it. Just make sure you protect the ball. And then otherwise we're going to lean on, you know, the run game and other conservative aspects. And so LaFleur did a good job, but I know they want to get Love obviously onto that field as soon as possible, health permitting.
On the other side of scheming, Charles, Shane Waldron, people not necessarily impressed. I know you covered Texans Bears in your town there in Houston. Also, just a lot going on. Caleb Williams at times maybe not realizing you can't throw some passes he throws. And then after the game, got Stroud trying to give him a little advice, and he looked very annoyed by it. But what's your overall takeaway from that one?
Yeah, the post-game interaction with Stroud was interesting because when you watched it unfold, you're like, okay, that was more than just a like, hey, you know, good game, keep it up, you know, hang in there. But it was longer than that. And you could see Stroud was the one who kind of kept engaging it when Caleb looked like he just wanted to get out of there. And then afterward, Caleb got asked about it. And he just was like, he made it seem like it was just like a nothing exchange. Like, it was just like, you know, he kind of really, really downplayed it. And then later when I heard kind of what the audio was, I'm like, wow, this is, I don't know if he was salty because he lost. You know, I think he was upset about that. He'd had a really bad game. He'd been beaten up, he got sacked 7 times. He's pressured the entire night, virtually every single snap. You know, the Bears looked awful. The offensive play calling by Shane Waldron in that game was really, really poor. I mean, there was no attempt to do anything balanced. Completely veered away from the run game. Like, it was a weird thing too, because the organization, they were really excited when Shane came in, because they're like, we're going to get away from this penchant we had to throw the ball too much, lean too much into, you know, a play calling style that was constantly putting Justin Fields at, you know, in harm's way. And that's exactly what has happened so far with the, I mean, their offensive line is just, the center is terrible. Like, I don't even know at this point, particularly after the Titans game, I was like, I don't even know how to start the guy again after you saw some of the snaps where he's just getting absolutely trucked every single play. But I think what was interesting to me is I'm watching the game and Caleb's just getting killed. They're not adjusting anything. He's forcing things at times. He's missing open players at other times. And I actually thought about Washington because I saw the Commanders and their offensive line's worse than the Bears, absolutely worse. And yet Jaden Daniels has had I don't want to say a completely different experience in terms of protection, but a much better experience. And when you look at how Cliff Kingsbury's called the game there, the first game, it was insane how much they focused on get the ball out of your hands immediately. You're throwing it behind the line of scrimmage. You're throwing it to the line of scrimmage. We're going to keep this as tight as possible, and we're just not going to give the other team any chances to get shots at you unless you take off running. And that's something that they're trying to work on game to protect themselves. Second game out, same thing. You know, you saw them open the passing game a little bit more, especially in the second half of Daniel's second game, but you can see how they schemed it to try and protect him just by not giving defenses the opportunity to get to a quarterback who's standing back there waiting for mid-level to long, intermediate to long routes develop. They're not doing that. Terry McLaurin has been virtually, like, you can just write him off so far this season because they can't wait. They can't sit there and go, well, let's let Terry get deeper into the route tree and then, you know, we'll take some long shots because they know that means Jaden Daniels is holding the ball. And that's not happening with Caleb. Shane has called the game as if he has adequate protection, and he does not, and he has not reached for the running game, and it's very frustrating, I think, especially for that fan base, because they're like, it's a lot of hallmarks of what happened to Justin Fields, kind of has happened to Caleb the first 2 weeks of the season, and then now you have Roma Dunze's dad, and this like just happened. James Odunze, like in the last 24 hours, is like tweeting out clips of like Rome open.
Yeah. Like, oh good. Like, oh goody.
I'm like, here we go, football dads.
Yeah, really good stuff there. So, Charles, back on the Titans front, you know, we talked with you last week about the disastrous pick six from Will Levis against Chicago. And this week, it wasn't quite the same, but a similar turnover that Will Levis had in this game. So your concern level with that from 1 week to the next, and another just horrendous decision from Will Levis. And, by the way, the Titans have gotten a punt block 2 weeks in a row, too. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I actually thought this week's turnover was worse. I really did, because it's the quintessential, you know, you have to know what you absolutely cannot do. And it was, every part of it was just a bad play. Continuing the play, not throwing the ball away, maybe when you had the opportunity, but then thinking, let me just throw this out here, and you're putting another player on the hook. I mean, look, the pick six was terrible. It was bad, but you can also chalk that up to it's a natural thing that quarterbacks run into, even good quarterbacks. You're not perceiving the coverage well enough. You're just putting the ball out there and you're thinking, I have an opportunity here. There's space, whatever. Either you're not seeing it, you're not reading it right. But it's a typical football play. It's a typical football mistake that gets made a lot, and you can clean that up. What happened this week, though, was it's a mindset and a mentality thing. Not knowing what is enough. Not knowing the things I cannot do. And also taking a loss, taking a sack, knowing you're in the red zone, knowing you have an opportunity for a field goal. And, you know, that's the kind of stuff where when quarterbacks do that repeatedly, you're like, this guy's not going to make it. Like, you can't be, because that's something that's really, really hard to remove from a quarterback's mentality. And when I saw Brian Callahan like go off and, you know, cameras catch it and you can see exactly what he said to Levis and the cursing and all that stuff, I was like, it's going to be interesting to see how, you know, Callahan addresses this later. And I really loved it. I loved that he came out and was like, this was dumb. And I was upset and, you know, talked about it happening in the red zone and giving up a field goal and all that. And, I think that's what you got to do. You have to step up, and I don't mind that he did it publicly, but you have to step up early on with quarterbacks like this and say, you need to know you cannot do this, because that is the type of thing that loses games for us. And you're not going to be a starting quarterback if this continues. And I'm just telling you right now, if this happens 3 weeks in a row, if he does it again, I think at that point, then you're like, okay, do we have to sit you? Like, do we have to bench you? Because, you know, you can't arguably cost us two games in a row here. And if this happens a third time and you're not getting it, I think at that point you got to start thinking about, do we need to pull back on him a little bit to make him understand that he better have this in his head every time he goes out there. And just because he's in the grasp of somebody, don't start looking to do stupid things. It was, I can't even imagine how frustrated Titans fans were in that moment, but I was glad to see, you know, a new head coach step up and I think address it the way it should have been addressed.
Well, to be clear on that, and this, cause this leads into my next question. When you say benching, you're talking about a teach him a lesson benching, not like, okay, Mason, you get the rest of the season.
Yeah. Not permanently. Hey, you know, this is, we're not screwing around here. Like, either,
right,
you know, we're coaching this out of you now, and there's going to be repercussions that are not just me screaming at you on the sideline. Like, if you do this again, you're going to get yanked out of the game, and maybe not for the entire game, but it's going to be a situation where we're going to take you off the field. And like, it's embarrassing. I hate repeatedly bringing this up, but when this was going on with Wentz, and again, it is very similar to things that you saw with Carson Wentz, where he was overcompensating with his skill and talent, thinking he could do anything, and he was destroying games. And the thing that the Eagles ran into that was so difficult, and then it happened again in Indianapolis, was Wentz was stubborn about it. He was hard-headed. Like, he refused to learn to limit himself in situations where the exposure was potentially, you know, costing your team a game. And at some point, and the coach said they were losing their minds. They're like, he just will not listen. Like he will, it's not getting through to him. And it frustrated two staffs in a row. It frustrated the staff in Philly, frustrated the staff in Indianapolis. And at some point you're like, well, it's just in his DNA. He can't not, make a bad play. He always feels like he has to, try to hero ball this moment, and it's just disastrous. And you can't have a starting quarterback who does things like that. And I think it's something that they probably should have taken on much more aggressively early on in Philly. That's how ownership felt. I can tell you that with Doug Peterson, it became a conversation in the building from the owner. Are you going to coach him hard? Like, are you going to, you need to come down on him in these situations. He's got to learn and understand what he can or can't do. And I think they felt like Doug was not doing that. And that's part of why they got to a crossroads and Doug left.
Well, speaking of ownership and quarterbacks messing up and benchings and all that, I mean, the absolute bleep show in Carolina, Charles. First of all, it's just amazing to me. I understand how bad the kid's been. I think they've also destroyed him. That's my opinion.
Yeah.
Or at least they've made it really tough on him. First of all, do you believe that they are going to shop him? And second of all, I mean, where's David Tepper rank? I mean, I have to look at Canales's answer the other day as some tacit acknowledgement that Tepper is driving another bad decision in that franchise.
So here's the problem. And it could be a lie. I mean, I spoke to someone there and I was told, no, they're not. And it was after Adam Schefter had brought up on his podcast, hey, maybe, Miami, a potential trade to Miami or whatever. And which seemed really speculative. And I was told by someone there, that's not the plan. Like this is not a, he's done, we're going to trade him kind of a situation. I don't know if that's true or not. And the problem is, the reason why I don't know it's true or not, it did not come from David Tepper. And that's the, no matter what you're told by Dave Canales or Dan Morgan or anyone else in that organization, you always know, and it's come from every person who has departed that organization, at the end of the day, any decision can be turned around on a dime by David Tepper. He can change his mind, and he has no qualms, or at least in the past, has had no qualms about stepping in and saying, nope, this is what we need to do. Like, you're doing this wrong, or I disagree with this. This is how this is going to change. And supposedly, and again, when I went through Carolina, I was told straight up, like, no, Dave's not doing that anymore. He gets it. He understands. He has to just let the coach, the coaching staff and the front office do their own thing and make their own decisions. And even if he doesn't agree with it, he has to let them be at the controls. But I was told from inside the organization that this is more the way it was termed to me was, he needs to heal, like letting him, get a break and heal, mentally, in terms of like his confidence, because he has just been destroyed basically from the, first game on of his rookie season to this point, particularly by the offensive line that really throttled him. The line, I think, has played better this year, but it's more of a, he just never built a base of confidence in year one. There was the coaching staff change and he's just had a ton of stuff thrown at him. But what scares you is, I'm talking to personnel evaluators and like scouts and stuff. And it was even before he was benched. And I'm like, did everybody just miss on Bryce? Like, what's the deal here? And to a man, everyone kept saying no, no, no. Like, and it was like all different versions of the same answer where it's like, no, it's a Carolina problem. They're the ones that destroyed him. They're the ones that gave him a horrible offensive line in year one. They're the ones that made the coaching staff change. There's organizational chaos around him, and it has mentally ruined him. And one scout in particular, and I wrote about this and I quoted him, he talked about the, I think it was like the hot read to Seelan, where it's like basically a wide handoff where he's, ball snapped. He turns to his left. He sees the pressure. He knows the pressure's coming. His hot read is literally like a 3-yard pass. And he missed Thielen by like 2-3 yards in front of Thielen. It was horrible, just a horrible play. And it was on all the clips and stuff. Everybody's seen the low light of it. And this scout said to me, he's like, he just talked about how insane that was and how like at Alabama, that is a play that Bryce Young made 999 out of 1,000, throws. Like it's a throw he makes in his sleep. And now he can't even do that. And you know, he basically is like, you can see how mentally fried he is. And I think they do agree with that inside the organization. I do think they think he's got a confidence problem, and it's messing up, you know, like his footwork's not good, his body language. They were really, really concerned about his body language. And that I think factored in the benching as well. So yeah, it's rough. And I think back to Zach Wilson and with the Jets, you know, and just talking to the Jets organization after Wilson was on his way out there. And I'm just saying, we never should have started him as a rookie. It was such a huge mistake. And that destroyed his confidence in year one, and he never really recovered from that. And I wonder if that's kind of where Bryce Young is.
Charles, on the AFC South front, you brought up Houston. They get the win. They improved to 2-0. Everybody else, not going so hot for it. Titans are 0-2. Colts are 0-2. Jags are 0-2. Specifically with Jacksonville and Indy, your concern level with those two teams at this point, and in a little bit of a different situation. I mean, Anthony Richardson made, what, his seventh start in the league the other day.
Right.
So
they're
still young there. Trevor Lawrence, not looking great so far. What's the concern level in Jacksonville?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's crazy because I think they're having red zone problems again. Like, when you kind of watch what their efficiency looks like in the red zone, it's going back to Lawrence kind of always had some, other than, you know, look, he had that season, obviously, where he played sort of to the level that we expected. But, you know, the decisions, some of the throws that he makes, and I don't think Doug has called a particularly great game so far. I think, you know, Lawrence has been undermined the first 2 weeks of the season. I think Doug Peterson has struggled a little bit in some of the play calling mistakes that he's made. Also clock mistakes. He's had clock management issues the first 2 weeks as well. But, you know, I think there's a couple of things that when you look at who Lawrence is working with, number one, Christian Kirk, I don't know what's going on there. Like, I'm not entirely certain how he's fallen off the map like this, but he's got a rookie receiver in Brian Thomas Jr. You know, Brenton Strange, the tight end that started, you know, this last week, is a second year player that I think is still developing. You changed out, you brought in Gabe Davis. So really the skill positions, I think, around Lawrence, that's another thing too, from a chemistry standpoint, he's struggling with not having Evan Engram on the field, which I think was kind of, you know, a little bit of his security blanket. And, you know, I do think there's some ripples of losing Calvin Ridley as well, not thinking you weren't going to lose him and not really adequately responding to that loss. And I will say this too, and I think it's more than just in Jacksonville. I wonder if teams are waking up to, maybe we need to play guys in the preseason. Like, maybe we actually have to, like, we need to play quarterbacks in the preseason. We have to play our offensive line in the preseason to actually give these guys some snaps and give them, you know, an ability to build up at least a modest amount of chemistry, you know, going into the regular season. Because offensively, I mean, we're at like a 5 or 6 year low in terms of like touchdown passes. The first two, I wish I had the stat for me right now, but I think we're at an all-time low or a 5 or 6 year low in terms of like touchdowns through the first 2 weeks of the season, like passing touchdowns. And I think a lot of that has to do with chemistry and the fact that nobody is really getting any realistic chemistry opportunities for basically, you know, January until September. And that's what some of these teams are struggling with. It's a Bryce Young thing too, by the way. And when you talk to people in that organization, they're like, yeah, we probably should have played Bryce more than one series the entire preseason. You know, he needed more than that. And I think when you look at Jacksonville and the changes that they made offensively around Trevor with those skill position guys, I think there's some chemistry issues there too. But again, I will tell you, I do not think Doug has had his greatest two games coaching, that's for sure.
Well, I think they're, you know, I get that, and that trends that way until the next starting quarterback, you know, gets a knee blown up in a preseason game. But I think the bigger trend, or the trend that we should see, is teams figuring out that, like, instantly throwing your rookie quarterback out there is could really be a problem. right? I mean, I know it's just late, but what everybody does now, but maybe it's because, you know, most of my life that was just a total no-no in this league, but I feel like right. I feel like that's got to change some, right?
I mean, I do. I think here's the interesting thing. I think in Minnesota, even though, you know, McCarthy was playing well prior to the meniscus tear, I still don't think they were going to start him. I still think they were going to sit on him for at least a little bit. They felt good about what Sam Darnold was doing, and I think they were really excited that JJ showed some stuff in the preseason. But I'm telling you, that organization, they were 100% geared toward starting the season with Darnold and kind of seeing how it played out before they potentially turned to McCarthy. You look at the Patriots, same thing with Drake May. I mean, they stuck to their guns, and they May had the momentum to start when the season kicked off. And they're like, nope, we're going to go with Jacoby. We're going to stick with the plan that we had really from the moment we drafted him. And, you know, and then there's the Penix situation in Atlanta where, you know, he's getting the long-term red shirt. Nix has struggled, obviously, in Denver, turnover issues. You know, so he's kind of grinding through it right now. I don't know if you've seen any of his post-game pressers, particularly the last one.
I think.
He got asked about the end zone pick, where he just says, what happened there? I threw it to the other team.
yeah, that was good.
He's like, yeah. And so, you know, Caleb, I think if you're going to start them, you have to game plan it in a way that protects them. And I'm going to keep going back to Washington. Like, I think through two games, 22 of Jaden Daniels' 50 to 60 odd attempts, 22 have been to the line of scrimmage or behind it. That's insane. Like, it's nuts. Like, but you see what they're doing. They're like, we're just not giving anybody an opportunity to tee off on him. And, you know, there's other plays where they call the offense to move the pocket to, you know, take some pressure off the offensive line. I think they keep harping on it with him. Like, hey, when you run, like, you keep putting yourself in harm's way. And so far you've been okay, although there was a close call there at one point. But, you know, physically you have to also understand, don't take punishment, get out of bounds, get down. I'm with you. I personally believe, even if it's like a Mahomes thing, even if you have the Ferrari, park it in the garage as long as you can. And even if that means losing some games, at least, you know, get into a season where you understand your personnel a little bit more. Your offensive line has an ability to build up some chemistry early in the season. Get your bearings as an organization before you figure out when you want to insert these guys. I hope the league is turning back to, being far more conservative with rookie quarterbacks. But I also live in a place in Houston where they were like, no, he's ready to go. And clearly they were right.
Yep.
From the second he touched the field in Houston, he looked like he was a, 10-year veteran at quarterback. Now that's an outlier, obviously. That really never happens. But I'm gonna keep harping on this preseason stuff, man. The fact that nobody plays in the preseason is a monumental problem. And you know, the Jets, right? Like, go and look at Rodgers' history of openers, like the last 3-4 years. He's atrocious in openers, just terrible. And go and look and see how much he ever played in any of those preseasons. Just doesn't see the field. And I'm telling you, I think that has something to do with how these guys start from a chemistry standpoint.
Charles, great stuff as always. Thanks for taking time to be with us, and we will talk to you next Thursday.
Appreciate it, guys. And by the way, the Matt Patricia thing,
dude,
of all the things he had going for him, Bill, I was in the same boat when I saw that. I didn't hear it. I saw headlines about it first, and I'm like, no way. Like, come on, there's no way he said this. I just, man,
asinine.
Some people, he is a Matt Patricia stan. Like, I've never seen anybody in my life. I'm with Joe. That undermined a lot of all these things I liked about Belichick. I'm like, God, why would you throw it all away? Why do you keep throwing things away on this guy? Let it go. Man.
Thank you, Charles. Appreciate it. Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports, our guest on Robbie and Rex Show. A lot to get to there from what Charles had to say on the Titans and Packers. We'll get to that coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Got some tickets to give away. A pair of VIP tickets to the Nashville Oktoberfest at the Bicentennial Capital Mall State Park on Sunday, October the 6th. Be caller number 3, and you can win these VIP tickets to Nashville Oktoberfest, which include unlimited beer and wine served in the VIP area, 2024 glass 1-liter beer stein, private seating, luxury bathrooms with air conditioning, and much more. Caller number 3, 615-737-1025. Taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines, which, as always, are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. The Blue Raiders kicking off this Saturday at 3 o'clock on 93.3 FM Totally Hits Nashville. Pregame at 1:30. Coverage also available on the 93.3 FM Totally Hits Nashville app and at TotallyHitsNashville.com. Thanks to Charles Robinson for being with us in the last segment. Jordan Love back on the practice field yesterday for the Packers. So will it be Love? Will it be Malik Willis on Sunday for Green Bay against the Titans? Adam Schefter putting this out there about 40 minutes ago, Joe. Quote, despite what was projected to be a 3 to 4 week absence due to his knee injury, there's a chance that Jordan Love can make it back in time to start Sunday at the Titans. Quote, I wouldn't be surprised if he plays this week, said one source. It's definitely day by day, like he said, and 50-50 at best right now. But Schefter goes on to say, but the larger point might be that even if Love can't make it back by Sunday, he'll have a realistic chance to return next week at home against the Vikings, which would mark a 2-game absence. So Love back on the practice field yesterday, and now we'll see what it looks like for the Titans. Is it going to be Jordan Love, or is it going to be your old friend Malik Willis in quarterback, under center for the Packers on Sunday?
Yeah, like forced to guess, I'm going to guess that it's still going to be Malik Willis, because I just feel like, you know, like the Schefter report, that's interesting. I just feel like ultimately the decision is going to be like, man, I think that this game can be won without him. And you really feel good about him being full Jordan Love, you would think, at least, right, at this point, by the Minnesota game, which is a huge game, shaping up to be a huge, you know, as huge as a September game can be, game, given how Minnesota has started. So I'm right now, I'm not discounting it, obviously. It's obviously a possibility. It's obviously a real thing. I don't think this is just like sandbagging, that he wouldn't be on the practice field if it was, but I still am going to guess it's going to be Malik Sunday.
And if it is, you're going to have, it's going to be interesting to see how Green Bay adjusts. Because, like, if you're the Titans looking at this, and I heard Jeffrey Simmons allude to this yesterday about, you know, I mean, you got to stop the run, and nobody runs the ball on Tennessee Titans, which we've seen that not be the case before, but we'll see. But if you're the Titans, you're looking at this and you're saying, all right, well, if it's Malik Willis, we got to make him throw the ball as much as humanly possible. Like, I think it changes a little bit if it's Jordan Love, right? Like, it's a really different week from a preparation standpoint, whether it's Love or Willis. Now, look, you're gonna try to stop the run and limit how effective Josh Jacobs can be in either scenario. But I do think that there's a pretty big difference between Love and Malik in terms of game planning. When you know that when Malik's in there, and I think the numbers bear this out last week, they're in a perfect world for Green Bay, they're not going to want to throw the ball that much. And when they do, they're not going to want to utilize the middle of the field. Like, that's a much different scenario than you have with Jordan Love. So if you're Denard Wilson this week, how are you divvying up the game plan depending on which quarterback you might see?
Yeah, I think you have to mostly prep for the Packers offense under Love, and you have to look at what the Packers did last week with some creative run stuff that they had for Willis and prepare for that. If there was no hint of Jordan Love and it was like he's not practicing, it's like, okay, it's going to be a Malik Willis game. Then I think, you know, you would obviously be able to look at what they did last week, expect them to do more, and really be just game planning to stop the run in general, and just be like, if we stop the run, you know, take your chances with Malik Willis on 3rd and 8. It's just like, you'll take that all day. But now I think you have to be more mindful of what the Packers' best offense is with Jordan Love. And then if it turns out the other way, you're not going to be as prepared for it. But I'd rather be less prepared for what we saw against the Colts than I would less prepared for the full Packers offense, which with Jordan Love at the controls is awesome.
Do we have some back and forth sniping going on between you and Indy Ben on the text line? What's happening?
Yeah, I mean, Indy Ben is, I think, is maybe the Colts fan who's the most like hate watching slash commenting on the Titans. You know, like he just, and again, it's like it started with him saying, I don't believe for a second their O-line's the worst in the league, like it was last year. And, you know, back and forth on that, I'm like, well, it's been terrible, right? I mean, it is. It's the two things being true, but his comeback is just admit Levis is terrible right now. Okay, but like I said, first of all, no one on this program or that I really hear in Nashville is saying otherwise or making excuses for him. If the offensive line is bad and you call that truth out, you are not making excuses for Levis. So I went back and say, how's Anthony Richardson doing? He said, better than Levis, that's for sure. I've never said
Anthony Richardson was pretty bad on Sunday.
Yeah, you were there. I mean, so whatever. Indy Ben, his obsession with the Titans, I appreciate it. He gets the conversation moving.
He does. The Nashville Predators launching their 2024-25 season today. Training camp is just about 15 minutes away from getting underway. There is some Preds news to get to coming up next. We'll do that. Take your thoughts on the Preds as well. 615-737-1025. Tune in to 94.9 The Fan today as the Sounds take on Norfolk. Pregame at 10:50. First pitch 11:05. Coverage also available on the 94.9 The Fan app and at 94.9thefan.com. Sounds Baseball presented by Twin Peaks, Family Leisure, Five Points Roofing, and Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063 The Game. Tune in to the Chase and Big Joe show from 9 to 11 for your chance to win all-inclusive tickets in the Eurostone Club to see Kings of Leon live at Bridgestone Arena on Thursday, September 26th. Contest presented by Green River Whiskey, Green River Distilling Company, Owensboro, Kentucky. Alcohol volume varies by product. Please drink responsibly. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road. Joe, all I'll say is this has the chance to be a banner week on Vol Twitter. Just a banner week.
Yeah, Big Orange Mac getting it done out there, eh?
God.
Boy. When do we have him on again? We need to have Chris on again.
Might need to do that.
Maybe the Alabama week or something.
Really remind him to keep things FCC compliant.
Yes, we cannot repeat much of what he does on Twitter.
Oh, boy.
But I bet you Big Orange Mac would take a one-point win right now.
I bet he would. The Nashville Predators with training camp underway today, Joe Rexro. They're on the ice. I mean, I would imagine right now, but their session gets kicked off officially here in about 10 minutes. I think a little bit of a glimpse, Joe, into how they're going to start. They've got, you know, there's enough people in camp right now where they've got three different groups. So it's going to be long practice days. They got a doubleheader preseason game in Florida coming up on Sunday. So that is the good part about hockey training camp is, I mean, you kind of just get right to it. Like there's couple practices, you get games, you make cuts, and then you go at that point. Group one today has Philip Forsberg, Ryan O'Reilly, and Gus Nyquist in it. So conventional wisdom would tell you that those three guys are going to play together to start, at least the start of camp. And group B has Steven Stamkos, Jonathan Marchessault, and Tommy Novak. So, I mean, there's been no lines yet. I could be wrong here. But that tells me, Joe, that that's probably the top six that they're at least starting with in terms of camp and given the first look to is Forsberg, O'Reilly, Nyquist, which is no surprise given the way that they played a year ago. And Stamkos on the wing with Novak and Marchessault would be my guess on how that thing starts here.
Yeah, makes sense. And we've talked about it, and you know that's a big jump for Novak, big opportunity for Novak. I think I saw you had a tweet about some different combinations you might look at. And I think, you know, it's possible we see that. I mean, I think when you have a success the top line had last year, it totally makes sense to say, let's see if that can just continue. But also, I think a lot of times you see stuff like that erode a little bit the following season, especially, you know, like is Gus Nyquist going to have another year like that? I mean, that's probably the biggest question with that line. But
for sure.
Bottom line is, it's just the excitement of this many good players and different combinations you can have is just not a thing we're used to seeing around here.
No doubt about it. I mean, the excitement is very high. And, you know, Barry Trotz spoke earlier this morning, kind of talked about that a little bit. Quote, on paper, We look like a good hockey team in fantasy hockey. I told the players it's fantasy hockey until we become a good team. So you can kind of get the picture of the message that Barry Trotz and Andrew Burnett are going to be hammering into these guys for the next couple of weeks here. Some quick notes. Spencer Stastny not at camp right now. He is missing the start of training camp because of some personal reasons. So Stastny not out there today. Philip Tomasino got his deal done yesterday. So a one-year deal for Philip Tomasino, and he will be out there today. So the Parson
and, right?
Yeah.
825?
Yeah, the Parson and Tomasino deals kind of came down to the last minute in the offseason there, and we see that happen sometimes. But both of those guys in camp, Joe, I mean, I put out my 23-man Predators roster yesterday on Twitter at RStanleyNHL heading into this. We'll see what it looks like. To me, based on the contractual standpoint, 22 spots are locked up, to me. So I think 22 of the 23 are kind of firmly in control. Who's going to get that last spot? I don't know. Could it be Zach LaRue? Could somebody else have a big camp? Could they go eight defensemen instead of seven? There's a lot of different ways that you could kind of go with it there. And if you went eight instead of seven, you could go Del Geiso. But bottom line is, Joe, there's a ton of excitement about this team, and they get their season officially kicked off today.
And I think the sneaky exciting thing would be LaRue making this team, right? Yeah. I mean, obviously it's a subplot with the Stars coming in and all that, but I'm excited to see him at the NHL level and see if the way he plays, you know, and if he can translate and be productive at this level. I think that would be another little boost of excitement for the fan base to see one of those guys really come through in a camp and solidly make the team.
No doubt about it. This is a perfect example of why this time of year is so great, especially as we get deeper into October coming up in a couple weeks. Big college football games this weekend. NFL's in full swing. Hockey's getting started. You got to love it. Great time of year. Jason Big Joe is coming up next. You're listening to 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
Hey guys, Lady Luck here. Are you going on any road trips this summer? I know I'm going to be going on a bunch of road trips. And being that I'm going to be passenger princess, I love playing on SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest has all of my favorite slot games, live blackjack, live craps. Head on over to SpinQuest right now and get yourself a $30 coin pack for just $10.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.